Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September the 6th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting today with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I think it's a bit of an understatement to say that we have a lot to talk about. Well, we have a lot to talk about with our friend Bill, but I'm going to begin asking Bill for a weather report about New York. How is it up in New York, Bill?
Actually, it was a delightful day today. I mean, we were out. We actually ate out for the first lunch in about 4 months with some relatives of ours, and it couldn't have been nicer. So, you know, I was glad to see that because we have been going through some heat waves here. Nice day. Nice day. So I have a great frustration that we were in north of New York City, but in New York City, it's a depressed look. It really is. So everything is really basically closed down in New York City. I think it's crazy. I think the city is systematically being destroyed. I'm not so sure this is completely. I'm not so sure everybody is unhappy about that, especially at the very far left level. Crime is way up in New York. Police are being harassed. Morale is terrible. So where we were was pretty good, but elsewhere in New York, the big story of the week, I guess, is the story that you can't even get a moving van in New York because so many people are leaving. You can't, you know, people are just going out in droves, and they're going to suburban areas, to other states, and what's remaining is a very depressed area. At the same time, the standard voices in the real estate industry are saying, you better get your new housing faster because it's going up, up, up. And not understanding this is one of the things that destroyed New York was these ridiculously high real estate prices, which may make a few bucks for people quickly, but in the long run, it can destroy an area. And we are, I think it's going to be a rebuilding process.
Yeah.
And how successful, I don't know.
That's right. You're exactly right. And New York is pretty crazy these days. And we'll talk a little bit about Governor Cuomo a little bit because he decided to get into a fight with the President of the United States. And I don't think he sounded very smart, but man, he sure said some pretty nasty things. But let's just begin with Labor Day as that one, you know, point in history where presidential campaigns begin, and here we are 60 days literally from the campaign. Depending on who you listen to, if you look at Rasmussen, president is 52% approval, which is a very good number. If you look at others, it's a wider gap. It looks like the battleground states are in a dead heat within 2 or 3 points. So I don't know. I think if I'm President Trump, I like where I'm at, considering where I was a month ago, Bill.
He is there. He has made some progress. I caution, though, that some of the polls are their internals are showing that something like 95% of voters have made up their minds and said they cannot be moved, and that something like 49% of voters say that they're participating in the election to vote against Trump. And I'm afraid that there's some truth in that. Whether the numbers are absolutely accurate, I don't know, and that's a critical point. But this is clearly an election about the president. It's a referendum on the president. The way I like to put it is Joe Biden can't win this election, but Trump can lose it. There is no wanting of Biden. There's no wanting of Biden. Not that he's a bad man. I'm not disparaging him. But you don't see a bumper sticker. You don't see a button. You don't see any expression of enthusiasm. Nobody really cares. The people who are coming out to vote are voting against or for the president. And right now, if I were Trump, I'd say, yes, I've been making some progress, but can I go the whole distance and make enough progress to actually win? And remember, the way the election is being organized, we probably won't even know on election night who won the election because of all these mail ballots, which have brought such complaint and suspicion about how they're going to be handled. The president has made progress. It is common for races to tighten, but I'm not so sure at this point he ought to be jumping up and down. It's not simply making the progress, it's whether there's enough progress. And remember that the president has a way of hurting himself, which he has done several times in the last few weeks by extreme tweets or comments that he shouldn't be making, like asking whether a reporter be fired, because it reminds people of what might be called the old Trump, the angry guy who is always on the attack. He should be above it and be the president and be very statesmanlike. And when he does that, he actually does quite well in the polls. So let's see what happens this week. As you said, Labor Day is the traditional beginning of the campaign. And it used to begin in Cadillac Square in Detroit. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Detroit is so depressed. No, that starting a campaign there would not be a particularly good idea for Mr. Biden. But it's the start of the home stretch. You're going to see a tremendously intense campaign. A lot of ads. You're going to also see terrible interference by the social media, which is all for Biden or against Trump. And they will, I have no doubt, reject some of the Trump material, if not all of it. We can have a real crisis of communications in this country in the next few months. There's also a possibility, you sent me an article about it just before we went on the air, that labor unions will start wildcat strikes, striking on behalf of racial justice. Whether that's a good idea for the union or not, it may happen. There are some unions that are absolutely critical, like some of the government employees unions. If they stop working, we could really be in a fix. However, that could create an enormous backlash for Trump. So let's see how that works out.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it's all up in the air right now as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there's so many things that can go one way or the other. I was talking to my friend, you know, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, last week, and he thinks he can see a scenario where this could be a Trump landslide, a scenario where it could be a Democrat landslide. And there's just a lot of things up in the air at the moment. The economy,
that's right.
we had some good news on Friday. My sense, Bill, is that the one thing going for Trump, you know, is the insanity of the other side.
Sure.
I mean, when you're willing to do some of the things that the other side is willing to do, that, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like by comparison, Trump looks more sane and the other side looks just totally insane. And I talk, for example, about, I mentioned Governor Cuomo this week. Governor Cuomo this week made an incredibly idiotic statement. He said that if Trump comes to New York, he better bring some bodyguards. Well, that's just totally inappropriate. But also, it shows me, what it says to me, Bill, aside from the fact that Governor Cuomo and many of these governors have some serious economic problems, some terrible budget deficits that they're going to have to deal with, but what it says to me is that the Democrat Party right now has to constantly say outrageous things about Trump to keep a certain part of their base happy. I mean, it seems like every day, you know, Democrat leaders wake up and say, okay, what can I say about Trump today to keep the left happy? And they're just crazy. And I think this benefits Trump. You know, again, I'm talking as a partisan. I know that. But I'm trying to be as objective as I can. I mean, if we were saying stuff like that about Obama, I would say, guys, cut it out. You're not helping when you say stuff like that about this. So to me, that's his best friend right now, the other side. And And then, of course, we learned this week, Bill, that Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb.
That's
another insanity coming out of the other side, Bill.
That's an old left-wing tactic to claim that certain groups didn't do something and other groups did. I remember during the early days of the Cold War, the Soviet Union would claim they invented almost everything, you know, the airplane and this and that. And it was made the stuff of jokes by the comedians on television. But it was bound to happen. Look, one of the sad things about all the turmoil we're having in the country now is that it's completely racialized. And that's
mm-hmm.
dangerous in any country. I mean, the Democratic Convention was all about race. Mr. Biden presents himself, as he should, as something of a moderate figure. But he's not running the party, and he's not running the – if he becomes president, it's unlikely he'll run the country. The Democratic Party has plans for him. The party is today run by radicals and leftists. The press is all for them. The press is not doing its job, not by a long shot. And we could wind up as a very different and very inferior country if these people got into power, because we know what happens when the real left, not the liberal left, but the real left takes power anywhere. And that is everything is destroyed, because
mm-hmm.
that's what they're about. We're going to bring down the system. Well, it's the system that has within it the ability to bring people out of this pandemic and into prosperity again. And, you know, I think that there's a possibility that the Democrats could win it all. And I think there's also a possibility that they would then try to cement their victory by changing election rules to the point where they could not possibly lose. And that is not the country I grew up in.
That's right. Well, yes, I know. And I'm not, you know, as I told a friend the other day, I'm not that worried about Joe Biden. If Joe Biden was all we had to worry about, I think he would turn out to be, you know, just a main street Democrat, not much of a radical. But what worries me is who's around him, and also his health situation, that it's not inconceivable that he won't last a first term. And then, you know,
yes.
Kamala Harris is president, and what happens when, you know, Supreme Court justices come up? So,
yes,
I just simply say we've got to get Trump reelected, whatever it takes. It's going to take a huge turnout. That's the only thing I can say, a huge turnout. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't even want to think about how I would feel the Wednesday morning after the election and Trump loses, not because I love Trump, not because he's my favorite president, but because of the other side, Bill.
Well, I fully agree. You know, we talk about this as being a negative election where people come out to vote against Trump. But I agree with you that there are plenty of people on our side who are coming out to vote against Biden and Harris and what their party stands for, even if they accept that Biden is not a crazy guy, and that Harris, despite some of her apparent proclivities, actually is reasonably moderate. The fact of the matter is they are not the ones in power. The power is held by the Bernie Sanders group. He didn't make it himself as a presidential candidate, but that if you look at election results around the country, they run regularly against regular Democrats and win regularly. Now, that may stop because the districts in which they run and win, this is the Bernie Sanders crowd, tend to be minority districts. And, you know, when you get into the great middle of American politics, I don't think that group does all that well. But the damage is being done little by little by little. We have a political campaign underway that is free of any adult discussion, that doesn't even seem to mention foreign and defense policy as if it wasn't important, and an election campaign in which the press overwhelmingly takes one side and does not seem to think there's anything wrong with that.
Right. Well, let's talk about the press for a second, because you have Atlantic Magazine puts out this article, I guess, on Thursday. By coincidence, the Biden campaign has a commercial ready to go Friday morning. So I'm sure that's all a coincidence. And they write an article about, you know, the commander-in-chief that is pretty, pretty nasty. And now you've got people out there saying, you know, he's talking poorly about our troops. You know, as the father of someone who was actually in the Army, I don't believe he said anything like that. And the evidence to me, Bill, is, first of all, my instincts tell me that he didn't say it. But the evidence is that the people who are supporting the president are willing to come out and put their name and their face in front of a camera. The people who say that he said this are in hiding. We don't know who they are. We have no idea who these people are. How are they? How they got the information? Nobody who was in the room or around the president remembers anything like this. I have a feeling that if John Bolton had heard this, he would have put it in his book, Bill.
I think that's true. He is very bitter toward the president that he said, no, I didn't hear any of this. Look, this is a case that really defies explanation because traditionally, if you're going to attack a president of the United States in a manner, especially during an election campaign, and you are a national publication, you bend over backwards to get every fact vetted, to get everything nailed down. The president, remember, represents the country. We don't have royalty in America. He or she is the highest-ranking American official. The presidency is an important institution. It is one of the most important in the running of the country. Historically, the press has been given only limited access to the president. People forget there was a time, especially during World War II, when the press was not permitted to quote the president directly. There is no obligation on the part of the president to hold news conferences. The obligations are the other way. It's up to the press to report the news without fear or favor. You've got a situation here where a very grave accusation has been made against the president, presented only by anonymous sources, and presented right before an election. If this was so important and it was a matter of such urgency, why didn't it come out a long time ago? This involved a trip to France that I think was either a year or 2 years ago. Why didn't it come out then? Why couldn't it have been leaked then if it was true? You would think that any real patriot would want that out there as quickly as possible. But it comes out only during an election campaign. Very suspicious. I suspect it was a high-ranking official. I cannot understand why anybody who was a true patriot would not come forward and say, this is what I heard, and I feel I have to report it. I don't know what excuse is being given, but and I know that Bernstein was on this morning, Woodward and Bernstein, and he said it was all right because in Watergate, we used anonymous sources all the time. Well, from what I recall, that is true, but that they were held on a very short leash by Ben Bradley, the editor of the Washington Post, and they had to prove every point to him before they went public. And that was not a direct attack on the president. That was an attack on an incident that occurred during a campaign for which the president might have been responsible. But the fact is that when Watergate first began, it was really about people within the Nixon campaign doing something illegal. This is a direct attack on the president and his attitudes in an area that is really sacred to Americans, which is the American who has given his life for his country. Now, it is true, as people say, that he had negative things to say about John McCain and said them publicly, and they were foolish, and they should not have been said. That almost killed his campaign. But you have a situation where it's he said, she said, but the comments attributed to the president don't sound like the president and don't, in terms of policy, sound like the president when you realize he has been the most proactive president in, for example, securing better care for veterans, in dealing with keeping them out of unnecessary wars, building up the military so they have the military has the right equipment. It just doesn't sound like the kind of thing he would say. And right. When you've got a situation like that, you should go to your sources, if there are any sources, and say, look, you got to go public. We can't publish right. this anonymously. Apparently that was not done, and the Atlantic is keeping the identity of the individual who claims he heard these things, keeping that identity very closely held. And I think it's a very ugly situation.
Well, Bill, let me just read. I hate to read stuff on the air, but I just want to very quickly. This is something that Brett Hume of Fox News wrote today or tweeted today. He says, once again, Trump is embroiled in a heated controversy. Once again, it is about something he's alleged to have said. And once again, his reported comments are at odds with his record, this time on veterans and the military. So I think Brett Hume is exactly right. I mean, he's being accused of something that he allegedly said. Now, if this was an investigation of corruption at City Hall, I can understand keeping somebody's name private. In other words, if you're investigating a contract between a city councilman and, let's say, a construction company, and somebody is tipping the information to the media, you got to protect that source. I understand
yes.
that. That I'm okay with that. That is an example of an anonymous source that you want to protect, or you want to at least protect people in the future so they give you information like that. We do have a law right now, I forgot the name of it right now, that protects those kinds of people, whatever. The
whistleblower law.
Whistleblower, yeah, that protect people like that better now. But my sense is, in a sense of fairness, that if you're going to criticize the President of the United States and say that he said something as awful as that, you got to be willing to go to your witness and say, look, you started this. And if you want us to go forward, you're going to have to give us your name and where you heard it. But that's not the case here. All we have here is, I heard that he said this, but nobody who was in the room or around the president heard it. And this is not the kind of president, as you know, there's a lot of people he's had fights with over the years who work for him. So I have a funny feeling that John Kelly or Jim or John Bolton or anybody else who works for him would have written about this a couple of years ago if it actually happened, Bill.
That's right. That's right. I mean, if this is that important, and if it is that well documented, why did it take an election campaign to bring it out? A comment like that by a president would be very, very alarming. And if I were a patriotic American who heard it and who wanted to get it out there, I would certainly not wait for the election campaign. I would do it immediately. That, you know, is it conceivable he said anything like that? Well, it's conceivable he might have used words like that, but in a different context. Because if you read the article, he was talking about the waste of war. He was talking about getting involved in wars that go nowhere, where the only thing they produce is casualties. And I just wonder whether he might have been talking about something completely different and they have used words that we use actually quite commonly when soldiers go off to war and we realize later that they are not being allowed to win and that the situation could turn out very, very badly. And some people will say those suckers got involved, you know, that in effect how unfair it is to them, how unfair it is to them. And that I can understand. I mean, if he had said something like that, because that's the way many people felt, that the guys who got involved were, quote, poor suckers. That term is used all the time. And, you know, President Kennedy once said, life is unfair, wars begin, and some men are called and are killed, and some men are never called at all. And he spoke about the unfairness of war. So it is conceivable, if you want to get, you know, find some credibility, that he was talking about that, and it was either misinterpreted or intentionally misinterpreted by somebody. So,
but that's not the article, Bill. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's not the article. The article was written as if he said this in the most negative light.
Yes,
that it wasn't
exactly
like
right.
That's what bothers me about the articles, because you could say, for example, and I want to make sure I say this very carefully, but you could say that the poor guys who were sent to Vietnam, all 67,000 of them, you know, I wouldn't call them suckers. I would never say that, or losers, but you could say that life was unfair with them. You know, I mean, I know the story of an 18-year-old young man who had killed in Vietnam almost right out of high school. Well, that's a terrible thing. You know, that's terrible unfairness. that, you know, that that happened to him. But the way this article was written, it was written by presenting what he said in the most negative possible way, as if to say, this is what the president thinks of people who are buried in that French cemetery. I guess that's what it was. I'm sorry. I just don't accept it. I think it's bad journalism, and that's why I don't think it changes any votes. The people who hate Trump are going to jump on this for the next 2 weeks. That's all they're going to talk about. And the people like me who plan to reelect them, we're just going to say, no, this is the Atlantic playing politics. So I that's the way I think it comes down, Bill.
I think there's a lot of truth in what you say. And I think it's such an ugly story. And Jeffrey Goldberg who wrote it is not a completely irresponsible person. He obviously believed his source. And without knowing the source and interviewing the source and having other reporters interview the source, I think the story dies. I don't think it should have ever been run in the first place, because as Britt Hume said, it does not seem to reflect his record. I mean, if his record was one of treating troops with contempt, if his record was one of being anti-defense, for example, I mean, Barack Obama left the military in terrible shape. It was Donald Trump who rebuilt it, and he rebuilt it with pay increases for soldiers. That doesn't sound like the kind of a guy who would make that kind of a comment.
Right. I agree. I agree with you. And that's why I don't think this is going to – this is not a story that I think will hurt President Trump. It just gives the enemies – I've reached a point, Bill, where I think there's people who wake up every day on the other side who literally turn on the TV and say, okay, what terrible thing can I hear about Trump today? And that's how they live their lives.
I think that's true. They are professional anti-Trumpers.
That's right. That's a good way to put it.
Yes, and they are part of this Never Trump movement, which is crazy. I mean, it's insane, because it basically says we will oppose everything he does. He must get out of office. And, you know, I can understand that under certain circumstances if the alternative was acceptable. You know, if responsible and reasoned people were being put up by the other side who could move the country forward in a responsible way. That's not the case today. The Democratic Party today has become so dangerous to the country that if I were a never-Trumper, I'd say, okay, for this time we'll take him. He has one more term to go, and at least he's pursuing reasonable policies, which he is. As a policymaker, he's done very, very well in many, many areas. I mean, look at foreign policy. Just in the last couple of weeks, an agreement in Serbia, an agreement for Israel and the UAE to have normal relations. There are stories that other Arab countries are going to make agreements with Israel under Trump's tutelage. That's tremendous. That's great news in the Middle East. He is also the one who recognized China as our most critical enemy, and he is building forces and making changes in military doctrine to deal with that. If Biden gets in, China suddenly becomes our friend. Suddenly he's going to say we shouldn't treat them as an enemy. Well, they are an enemy, unfortunately. We wish they weren't, but they are, and at least Trump understands that.
Right. Let me take a break, Bill, and we come back. We'll continue the conversation and also talk a little bit about the great economic news that we got this week, as well as some other things. We'll be right back. Well, I hit the wrong button. I hit the introduction button when I should have been hitting the other button, which is the bridge that we use between segments. So I apologize for that. You probably were wondering, gee, what happened to the other music? Well, I hit the wrong button, as they said. I think we've lost Bill for a second there. I'm sure he'll be reconnecting with us in just a minute. Yeah, there he is. There's Bill.
Yes,
we were
we
saying
got cut
we're,
off.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I apologize. We lost you. Or
right.
I hit the wrong button for the music, and I maybe hit the wrong button with you as well. So I apologize if I deleted you, but you're welcome back.
That sounds like the title of a good popular song. I'm sorry if I deleted you.
That's right. Well, that would be social media talk now. That would be
a
popular song in the age of social media. Well, we had some great economic news on Friday that, of course, was not being covered a great deal because of all this other crap with the Atlantic. And, you know, when it seems like when 8% unemployment would not be considered great news normally, but in this context, I think everybody's pretty happy with it, Bill.
I think that's true. We are making steady progress. The anti-Trump people, of course, say, well, it wasn't really spectacular progress. No, it's steady progress, and we're not going to have spectacular progress until the country opens up. But the fact of the matter is many businesses are trying to get back to a kind of normalcy, especially manufacturing businesses that manufacture products that we can use even though we're clamped up in a house somewhere or an apartment somewhere. Service industries, others. Some people are still working from home. Many, in fact, are working from home, and that might become the new normal because the way computers
mm-hmm.
are designed nowadays, I think you may find a whole new structure in some organizations where they hire people, let them work at home. It saves the company the price of an office. It saves a lot of other things. It could be a new way of running part of the economy. Now, we should point out there are many, many areas of the economy that are still closed. Here in New York, a city that depends heavily on theater and restaurants for its aura, really, they're both dead industries. I mean, the theater is completely dead in New York. There is no theater because you're not allowed to have an audience. So there are areas of the country that are completely devastated, but others are opening. I think that the evidence is building that it would be perfectly safe to open the schools, but the
mm-hmm.
teachers' unions are making that impossible. And but here in New York, I think Mayor de Blasio, in one of the few good things he's done, I think did order the schools open, then pulled it back because of opposition from the teachers' unions. So I think the progress we're making is in certain areas of the country, and in certain areas of the economy, but not the entire economy.
Well, there's two big economies, New York and California, that are not back in the game, and obviously that keeps if those two economies, let's say, had opened up the same way Texas has. I mean, I think we've been super careful in Texas.
I think
and now
you have
we've
too.
Opened. I mean, we were doing extremely well at the end of May, super well. We were going through the different stages, and then in early June, we got hit by a wave. I happen to think that it was related to the protest, but that's for another show. But anyway, we got hit in June and July. It set us back a little bit, but we've been gradually getting back in the game. And you can now drive around town and see signs everywhere saying we're open to restaurants. We went out to lunch today, for example, and you know, half of the restaurant is not functioning because they have tables that are literally, there's a sign that says, you know, this table is off, you cannot sit here. But at least,
yeah.
You know, the people working there, the people who work at the restaurants, at least they got some tips and some money. You know, half of something is better than nothing. And,
right.
you know, the movies are starting to open. I cannot wait for the baseball stadium to open because we have a new stadium and I want to see the games. But I think it's all coming back. But overall, our economy here is not what it was, but it's coming. But I think New York and California really went the way they went, Bill. And I think it was all political. I really believe that, Bill.
Oh, I agree with that, too. Look, California is in terrible shape because the entire state is run by one party. They're about to adopt a statewide curriculum that could come basically sounds as if it came right out of the Communist Party. And it will be adopted for the entire state. The way they do these things is they adopt them. Each school then adopts them. And if a parent objects, the parent is called a racist. And that's going to be the future of California. And I think what may happen is a lot of people may start to leave California. Another thing that could happen is the Democrats could get the idea, well, here's an opportunity for us. If we, if the moderates want a state, we'll give them a state, and it'll be a third of California, and then there'll be another third of California, and we'll have three states instead of one,
mm-hmm.
and we will take most of the Senate seats, so we can gain. And they may think that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you add that, if you add something like that to making Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia states, the Democratic Party will never lose the Senate.
Right. Well, that's true. Although I think if you because didn't they have a referendum in the last election, or didn't they talk about breaking up California into three states? And I remember one time interviewing a lady who was working in that campaign out there, saying that the way the states were going to be set up, the Republicans would actually pick up four Senate seats because it would be two for the Democrats, basically along the coast, and then north of California it would be one, and then sort of the eastern part would be another one. So in a sense, the Republicans would be picking up four Senate seats. That was her opinion. I cannot prove it either way. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen out there. But you mentioned about the schools bill. I like to pursue that because you wrote an article about the schools today or yesterday at Urgent Agenda. But the teachers union, this article that you mentioned that I sent to you, are threatening to go on strike. I think that would be a brutal mistake for the teachers union, because I can tell you here in North Texas, and there are already parents getting together in many of the areas here in North Texas, parents are getting together to figure out, you know, where to send their kids and how to get their kids out of public schools bill.
Well, yes, I can understand that. You know, there we ran an Urgent Agenda, a commentary by two very distinguished medical professors, one from Stanford, the other from, I believe it was Yale, and making the point that what you have right now is very unnatural. You have students who should be in school are at home, and they are showing bad symptoms. It's a bad mental health situation for them. They are falling behind in their schoolwork, which means not only behind in the school, but behind in the country and behind internationally. They fail, it would be perfectly safe to send kids back to school. They run immediately into the teachers' unions, who say, well, the kids might be safe, but we might not be safe. Well, you know, there are many things that can be done. I mean, you can have, I guess, teachers lecturing from behind a lectern, you know, a glass lectern. You might have kids in the classroom and the teacher on a television link. But getting those kids together with each other is very important for their social development,
right,
and their mental health development. But there does not seem to be any great urgency on the part of the Democratic Party, because, of course, naturally, the teachers union really controls the Democratic Party to a very large degree. They're very, very powerful, and I don't see that we're getting any cooperation out of them. What could happen is if Biden wins the election, he will pull in some chits and say, well, you see, we could work with the teachers union, so we can open up some schools. You know, what was really going on today in the United States is a form of extortion. The message being sent, and they don't dare send it explicitly, so they send it more subtly, is that we know these people who are rioting, and we can get them to stop it only if we're elected. And that is really like the old protection racket, you know,
mm-hmm.
vote for us because we're the only ones who can give you protection. And it is a racket, so they're being more discreet about it, but there may be some truth in it.
Right. Well, I'm sure that there is some truth to it, although I'm not so sure that irrational people in Portland are going to wake up one morning and say, hey, Joe Biden is president. Let's stop throwing bricks at cops. They're so irrational, Bill, that I'm not sure they're going to do that. But I can give you three quick examples here in the area. There, I know of a private school that they've been open now for 3 weeks. They have not had a single problem. No kid has gotten sick. And they have, you know, 800, 900 kids back. And they're following, I mean, tremendous restrictions. The teachers have to take their temperature, you know, when they go to the school. They take it again in the school. I mean, there's all kinds of precautions. And so far, so good. The Catholic schools are operating in the area without any any trouble. So, you know, and also in Fort Worth, which is another, as you know, another district, a bunch of parents are suing the Fort Worth district saying, if you're not going to open, give us the money back. Now, I don't know how far that'll get, but that's a sign of the disenchantment, Bill.
There is disenchantment. There's especially disenchantment on the college level, where many universities will not give back the money. They won't teach the classes except online, and they say, no, we're not going to give back the money. And some of these kids have put down big deposits. Some, of course, are on scholarship. Well, if they're on scholarship, they won't give up their scholarships because that's what they want. You know, you're getting a lot of great frustration right now. Imagine being a kid accepted to a prestigious university, and this is your freshman year, and you're not allowed to go. I mean, what do you do? Do you just sacrifice the year and say, well, I'll start next year? Do you get a temporary job? You know, I had an idea that for all the students who were out of school, that they could serve in the military for a year. And by agreement, the schools would not open until next year, but they could at least be serving their country and learning things. You know, you could the military education system is actually a very good one. But parents are particularly frustrated, particularly angry, and they don't know if they're being heard because the parties that are in charge of these states tend to be more left-wing than their national parties. I mean, you hear language used. You hear language used from, I was just reading an article from one of the Midwestern states, and the teachers' unions are thinking of striking there. And the article was written in this kind of Marxist ease, you know. They are people quoting people the way, speaking the way Marx would be speaking. I think we're learning for the first time how deeply embedded into the United States the political left is. I'm not talking about the liberal left. I'm talking about the political left, the real hard left. They control, I think, the teachers' unions. I think they control the American Library Association. They are recipients of new members who are trained in teachers' colleges that have become hard left. And you'll notice the press never mentions any of this.
Any of it.
It's as if it was a non-story. And we're going to wake up one day and find our country's children have been taken over completely by the hard left, and parents are not permitted to even discuss it.
Right. Well, that's true, and that's, you know, then the other thing they're pushing now is this 1619 project. I guess they're pushing that in many of the curricula in around the country. And now it's not happening everywhere. I know here in Texas it's been very controversial, so I don't know if we're going to have it here. Maybe some districts will, others will not. But I think in California they're thinking of doing it. But President Trump did something very interesting. He said, if any school district does that, we're going to cut the funding, or we're going to look into cutting the funding. I don't know whether he actually can or not, but politically that's a good issue for him, Bill.
It is a good issue for him. It is insane what these school districts are doing, but once again it shows the level of infiltration by the hard left. And yet if you talk about it or want to talk about it, you're called a McCarthyite, which we are not. If parents would be horrified to find what their kids are being taught, but those kids go into a feeder system that then feeds the universities, and after that feeder system feeds the universities, it feeds the American press. You're getting for the first time a generation of reporters who have been radicalized before they even come to the press.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, but this 1619 project, Bill, is so dishonest. Because it basically says that it was, I mean, the American Revolution was all about slavery.
And which it was not.
Which it was not. I mean, half of the country didn't even have slaves. I mean, the slaves were in the southern part of the country. Pennsylvania, New York, they didn't have slaves. I mean, they weren't out. I don't remember the Boston Tea Party about slavery. And so it's so dishonest that one of the benefits of having President Trump bring it up is that it forces Joe Biden, if the media ever gets around to it, to ask him, you know, where do you stand on the 1619 project? Because, you know, he's been avoiding.
Yes.
Have you noticed this, how Biden has been avoiding all these issues?
Absolutely. Well, I can't wait for the debates. I wonder, first of all, if he's going to show up. And if he does show up, how the press on the panel will handle it. and whether they will be the same old story, just you make sure that the Democratic candidate is made comfortable.
That's right. Well, the first debate is going to be Chris Wallace. I like Chris Wallace, and I think Chris Wallace will be tough on both. At least I'm hoping he is. And so I think Chris Wallace will balance the questions. I mean, are you comfortable with Chris Wallace?
I'm reasonably comfortable. I think he's a Democrat. He works for Fox News. He has been very tough on the president, but it is also true that he can be tough on the other side. I think that he is probably the most, in terms of neutrality, probably the best bet we have. I mean, I haven't seen the whole list. I don't know if the whole list has actually been published of the other people who will debate. But you can be sure of one thing, it will be top-heavy with Democrats. And there has been considerable complaint in the past about these debates because the people who win the debates are themselves quite liberal. You know, you remember the moment with Candy Crowley.
Oh, yes.
During the debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, and she corrected Romney, making it look as if he didn't know what he was talking about. She did not do any correcting of Obama. It was wrong. She left journalism soon thereafter. I don't know where she is. But, you know, you can have those moments, just as we're having a moment now with the press reporting on a comment the president is alleged to have made in France about American soldiers there, and the president simply denies it, and then we're left in limbo.
Right. Well, a comment made 2 years ago, if we understand the timing. So for 2 years, I guess this was not important. That's pretty amazing to me.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing to me because if a president of the United States had in fact said something like that, and I'm part of the inner circle, I would want that out there as soon as possible. Because I mean, if he did say something like that, that would have an impact on let's say my vote. But you know, he didn't say it, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, it's just amazing. But I want to close today, Bill. I don't know if you remember much of what happened in the 1972 Munich Olympics. And I bring this up. I'm sure you remember the terrorist attack. But I bring it up in the context of how you just don't know what's going to happen in the last 2 months of an election. This happened about this time in 72. Nixon was probably headed for re-election, but whether he was going to win by the numbers he eventually got, I don't remember at this stage that he was leading by a landslide. But I guess my point is that a lot of crazy things can happen in the last 60 days of an election, and the Munich Olympics incident, you also remember in 2004 where there was a terrible shooting at a Russian school.
That's right.
Put terrorism on the front page. I mean, so these are the things that could happen that we could be talking about next week, Bill. But yet they're not in the radar today, Bill.
That's right. Look, we always should say elections are unpredictable and campaigns are unpredictable. Some foreign country might have a surprise for us, or some series of American corporations or labor unions. We've talked about how teachers might strike. You don't know what's going to happen. Those surveys are interesting. Sometimes they're more entertaining than they are accurate, but at least they're entertaining.
Yes. You wrote an article. I wanted to close with this one, Bill. You wrote an article, your very last post at Urgent Agenda today, and it's about Selina Cedo and her article about, I guess, Pennsylvania. She was a reporter at least 4 years ago who seemed to be on top of what was happening when most of the country or most of the polls were showing Hillary Clinton winning easily in Pennsylvania. She would say, no, that doesn't make any sense because everywhere I go there are yard signs for Trump. And once again, there are yard signs for Trump everywhere. This article by Selina Cedo, I thought maybe you could summarize it because I thought it was very good, Bill.
Well, basically, she is one of the few reporters who goes out and talks to people. Talks to the average voter, and she was complaining that Biden didn't really see Pennsylvania on his trip. He, as you know, visited the state in the last week, and she talked about all the things that were happening around the state and the fact that there are areas that Trump has helped enormously through his trade policies, and that areas still are very, very depressed, but that Biden's visit was so superficial, and then he held a press conference where he allowed for like three questions, that he didn't see what he should be seeing. And I think that she is right. She's almost inevitably right that Biden makes these little outings. He stays in the basement, lives in the basement. Then when they let him out on the leash, he makes these trips that are extremely superficial states that are friendly to him, and he doesn't really get to learn anything. And I think that is absolutely the truth about this campaign.
Yeah, well, they're certainly protecting him when
he goes
out. I mean, the questions that he got on Friday were embarrassing. I mean, honestly, if I was a member of the media, I'd be embarrassed those are the questions they were asking him. When you compare the kinds of questions that Trump gets to the questions he's getting, and not just the questions, but the attitude.
That's right.
It's like, we love you, Biden, we hate you, Trump. That's the way it comes across, Bill.
Absolutely. I think the American people have detected the incredible slant in journalism, the slant in the educational system, a lot of slants, and now, by the way, in corporations, some of which are encouraging their employees to participate in left-wing racial politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I saw there was a story today that American Airlines is permitting its personnel to wear Black Lives Matter pins, but apparently only that, and that there are many people who are passengers who are furious about it. They don't want to be given a political lecture, and there are people on the other side politically who are furious about it, because so far no attempt has been made to give Mr. To give the opposition an opportunity. It isn't one person, it's really an opposition. So many of the employees of these organizations, like American Airlines, are very, very angry. I'd also point out that when passengers get angry, they can go to other airlines.
That's right. No, and I don't think this is a time for the airlines to be upsetting customers.
No.
Probably not it's just like the NBA. I mean, they're having a terrible time with ratings. Somebody wrote an article the other day saying maybe the players ought to concentrate in playing basketball and lecturing us, because, nobody really tunes in to watch political lectures. But, I mean, American Airlines is a major employer in our area, Bill. I mean, this is one of the major employers in North Texas, and they've had to lay off lots and lots of people. I know two of them. And I don't think that this is a good time for American Airlines or for any airline to be making customers angry. They're angry enough as it is because of all the restrictions. So I don't know. I see a lot more people driving or just doing their business on the internet, Bill, rather than flying.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what's interesting about this is that flying really – revolutionized the United States. It brought this very large country together. It linked areas that had never been linked before. And if the airlines go out of business, we risk that progress. And yet along comes AOC from the Bronx saying she thinks airliners ought to be grounded because they give out too much pollution. And, you know, this it's crazy to think about it, but it might happen. It might just happen.
Well, what's funny about that is this is, of course, coming from a lady who killed 20,000 jobs in her district.
Of course.
I don't think she knows much about anything. Well, Bill, have a wonderful Labor Day, and I hope you go out and join a parade or whatever they do in New York for Labor Day, and let us know if you see any boats there in the river. I understand there's a bunch of Trump boats there in the river. Maybe they're going to come to New York too, Bill.
Well, they might. The New York Times finally reported on the story, but only to report that two of them sank. That was the only reason they had for reporting the story. Just embarrass the president.
I know.
Yes, there are these boat demonstrations. I've never heard that before, by the way. Let's see how far they go. Now, I'm concerned more about the demonstrations within on shore, which can shut down parts of the city. And I think that may very well be happening.
Well, didn't something just happen in Rochester where they were attacking some people in restaurants, wasn't it? Wasn't there?
Oh, absolutely. There was a BLM, Black Lives Matter, demonstration over an incident that apparently occurred earlier in the year where a man who was turned out to be mentally ill was believed to have a gun, and he was killed by the police. And now we have another reason for a demonstration, and another reason to make demands of companies that have done nothing wrong. So,
or people who are out for a Saturday night, you know, dinner with your wife,
and yes,
and now
harassed.
All of a sudden you're being accused, you're being blamed for every injustice committed in the last 500 years.
Exactly.
And I keep coming, you know, I'll close with where we started, Bill. I think the best thing going for Trump right now is the people running against him. Because if you're one of those people at that restaurant and you got attacked or harassed by these protesters, I don't know, when you're driving home with your wife, you got to look to each other and say, you know, that Trump guy doesn't sound too bad.
That's right.
You know? So that's what I think. Well, Bill, you have a wonderful weekend, the rest of it, and thank you so much, as always, for giving us your time, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. And I guess I have a feeling we'll have something to talk about next week.
We may have a few things to talk about. If not, we can always fill up the old music.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we can always get your Broadway report from your days.
Right.
That's right, your admiration of Broadway. Thank you so much, Bill, and good night to you.
Good night. I'll talk to you again next week, Sylvia.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always a lot of fun to chat with Bill on Sunday nights. We've been doing it for quite some time, and it's a lot of fun. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later.